Good evening. Welcome to Iyun Tefillah. What is Shemona Esrei? Last week, in the brief history of Shemona Esrei, we talked about, I think we mentioned the Kuzari. The Kuzari says that just like the body needs food, and the further away from a meal you get, your body gets tireder and tireder and tireder. So too, your neshama gets more tired the further away from a tefillah that you get, and then when you want to reinvigorate yourself and refresh your neshama, you get a tefillah that plugs you into, you know, the battery source, the energy source that gives you a little electrical charge for your neshama, and you're ready to go on and go doing your things until it begins to wane again, and the process goes over one time and again after that. Then we also mentioned that Shemona Esrei was established al yidei the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, which was around the time of the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. We're not going to get into the details in terms of the exact dates of the formulation of the text. However, what it is important that we mentioned last week is Tefillah is Mide. Tefillah is Mide. Well, it's a big machlokas. Of course, Tefillah is Mide Araisa, according to the Rambam. The Rambam says, V'avadata es Hashem Elokecha b'chol avavcha. What is serving Hashem with your heart? That's tefillah. That's what the Rambam understands. The Ramban says, what is serving Hashem with your heart? It means serving Hashem with all of your heart. It doesn't mean tefillah. So the Ramban says there's no mitzvah to daven every day. The Ramban agrees that when you're in trouble, then there's a unique mitzvah to daven be'es tzara, at a moment of trouble. So if there's a, you know, a car coming at you very quickly and you suddenly stumble over your feet, that you murmur a prayer to Hashem to save you. That will be Midoraisa according to all opinions. But just to have a mitzvah every day to daven, that's machlokas. Rambam says yes, Ramban says no. Ramban says no. Easy to remember. However, and I just thought of that right now on the spot. That was good. But in your zechus, thank you. However, midrabanan, of course, we have to daven not only once a day, but certainly, men definitely three times a day, women a little more complicated, but that's not for tonight's shiur. Finally, we mentioned last week that Tefillah, Shemona Esrei, was composed by the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, 120 members of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, and the Gemara very importantly and significantly adds, Umehem, and amongst them, Kama Nevi'im, a number of Nevi'im, a number of prophets. Now, why is that important? It's important for the following reason, this will be new material. I want to share with you something that Reb Chaim Volozhin writes in Nefesh HaChaim. If you go back in history, let's say about 200 years or so, right to the advent of the time of Hasidus, so there was the Gra, who was very anti the Hasidish movement, that was of course the Baal Shem Tov, and the first Lubavitch Rebbe wrote the Sefer HaTanya, and on the other camp, in the Misnagdisha camp, there was Reb Chaim Volozhin, who wrote Nefesh HaChaim, which sort of a foil to the Sefer of the Tanya, of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And in Nefesh HaChaim, he talks in the fourth chelik about Torah very beautifully. If you ever want to be inspired about the koach of learning Torah, look at the fourth sha'ar of Nefesh HaChaim. But in the second sha'ar, he talks about tefillah, he talks about brachos, what does the word Baruch Atah Hashem mean? And in that context, he talks about Shemona Esrei. I'll share with you, I'll paraphrase some of his words. This is in Sha'ar Beis, Perek Yud. He asks a very simple question. How long is Shemona Esrei? You have your Siddurim in front of you. Let's say it's 8 pages long, but just the top half of the page. Does that really take 120 authors, Umehem Kama Nevi'im, 120 of the greatest minds of the Jewish people, and amongst them must be Nevi'im? It's not such a long tefillah. It's not even so poetic. You take one of the piyutim from the Lazar HaKalir that we say on Yom Kippur, that we say on Tisha B'Av, and it sounds so much more complex and so much more intricate. And here you're saying that you have 120 of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola and among them Nevi'im to write Shemona Esrei. Why do you need such a big to-do? Answers Reb Chaim Volozhin, and I'll share with you his words because his words are very precious. He says, the reason is because these individuals, this group of 120 with Nevi'im amongst them, perceived in their Ruach HaKodesh and their perception of Nevuah HaElyona and the clarity in which they understood how Hashem works, understanding exactly how we interact with Hashem, and they chose a text, a nusach, a matbeah is a coin, meaning a mint. You mint the coin, turns into a piece of bullion into a matbeah. That matbeah is that form of word, that form of text. They chose with these exact words to figure out the greatest possibility for our words to effect whatever it has to effect up in Shamayim. So if we had to pick the best words, the best phrases, the most effective way of getting whatever has to be done with our words, it were the Nevi'im and the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah who were able to perceive in their incredible Ruach HaKodesh and even almost among them Nevi'im, what the best way to do it is. Similarly, Rav Yaakov Emdin has a sitter called Yaivitz. Yaivitz stands for Yud Ayin Bet Tzadi, Yaakov Emdin, Yud Ayin, Ben Tzvi. His father was the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi was one of the Gedolei HaPoskim, and the Yaivitz, Rav Yaakov Emdin, was his son, and you could always remember that the Yaivitz is Rav Yaakov Emdin, because Yud Ayin, Ya'aveitz, Yud Ayin, is Yaakov Emdin. So he also goes according to the same perspective, and he wonders if there is such a focus on the exact wording that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah chose for the formulation of Shemona Esrei, then how come there are different nuschos that we have? Ashkenaz is a little bit like this, and Sfarad is a little bit like this, and Nosach HaRizal is a little bit like that, and if you have the Teimanim, they might have it a little bit like that. So I don't want to get into Vilam Alshinim, because there is the most variant of the texts, because that was written later, and we all know why that came about, because of people who were causing problems to the Jewish people, so we had to formulate very sensitively, and it was also the most heavily censored among the tefillos that were censored by the censors who censored the sitter. But so barring that tefillah, why are there still those small variant texts? So the Yaivitz says that there's only one reason for it. Mistakes of the copiers. Mistakes of the people, the scribes who are copying from one sitter to another sitter, and as people spread out and as communities spread out and as things happened, there was one text that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah composed with that Ruach HaKodesh, with that incredible Nevuah that they chose and weighed in the deliberateness of their minds, which is the perfect word to convey the perfect message. Any alternate variances after that were only mistakes. And therefore, right now, Ashkenaz is like it is, and Sfarad is like it is, and one of ours, or probably both of ours, have a little bit of mistakes here and there that take away from the perfection that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah had composed. So much so did this idea of the perfection, or I don't want to say the word perfection, but the incredibleness and the choice of words that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah chose, is that there are Sfarim that actually say that each bracha has a certain amount of words parallel to certain psukim. This bracha should have 42 words compared to this, and this one has, and the number of words, obviously, if you have a certain number of words and a significance to the number of words of each bracha Shemona Esrei, you're going to be understanding that there is a very definitive text, and the Chazal, when they were metakin, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, when they composed those brachos, made sure that there would be this exact specific number of words to match whatever they wanted to convey. Comes the Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and he says that how could you say that there's a set amount of words in every bracha of Shemona Esrei when I look at Ashkenazim over here, and I look at Sfaradim over here, and I look at Nusach Roma in Rome, and all the different Nuschos, and they all have different amounts of words in their brachas. There aren't, you know, there are variances among our communities, and therefore the Beis Yosef says, when I was young, I used to also think it should be, you know, a certain perfect number of words to match certain psuk and whatever other ideas, and then I realized, just by looking around at society, at the Jewish community, that there are variant, you know, length, some brachas, you know, an Ashkenazi bracha has this many words, and Sfarim have a few extra words in that bracha, and vice versa elsewhere. So don't look at each, you know, you can't assume that there's the perfect number of words. However, one thing is clear. Even if we take this last approach, that of the Beis Yosef, that says that perhaps there can be different texts of the Shemona Esrei, and we'll have one additional perspective in a moment, there is one thing that everyone does share, and there are no variants within. And that is, A, the content of each bracha, the order and the content of each bracha. That's already from the time of the Gemara, and that there are no variances in that. And, most significantly, the last line of every bracha is the same according to all the nuschos. Ashkenaz and Sfarad all have the Baruch Atah Hashem, Rafech Aleyam Yisrael, Mevarech. Except with three tiny, 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 almost insignificant exceptions, that might actually be because of carelessness or mistakes. But ultimately, practically, 99% of the time, the last line called the chasima, the seal, the conclusion of each bracha, is identical across the board. There is one different perspective that some of you might have heard. You might not have realized where it's from. This is an idea that the Chachmei HaKabbalah had gave over to us. I assure you, I don't know any Kabbalah. And my children always ask me if I know the secrets of the Torah. And they're very curious about the secrets of the Torah. I guess the Rebbe, you know, by Lag BaOmer, when they talk about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, they talk about the secrets of the Torah. So they say, Abba, do you know the secrets of the Torah? I say, no. I say, when are you going to ever learn that? I say, yeah, maybe when I'm 40. So 40 is very big for them. But we're getting there, slowly. I will not tell you in how long. So the Arizal is, I guess, the first one where we found it, written by his student, Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital says, not like I told you earlier from the Yaivitz, that Anshei Knesset HaGdola fixed one perfect text. Rather, says Reb Chaim Vital, in the name of the Arizal, Anshei Knesset HaGdola composed 12 different texts of Tefillah, one for each Shevet. Each Shevet, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says there's a Sha'ar, a gate that each Shevet has. I didn't look up the pasuk in Yechezkel. I don't know if it's referring to gates to the Beis HaMikdash or gates to heaven. I don't know what. But either way, there are 12 gates somewhere. Each Shevet has its own entrance way to wherever those entrances are. It's in the end of Yechezkel. You could look it up if you want to look at the end of Yechezkel. I don't have a parak. And for each of those gates, there's a different tefillah that each Shevet has to give to enter the gates of heaven, where our tefillahs go up. We know there's the idea of Shari Shamayim, Psachre Shamayim, Letzfilah Seina. We say at the end of Ne'ilah, let the gates not close, the gates have closed. So there are gates through which our tefillahs enter and travel. And each of the Shevet Shvatim have their own gate, and their own tefillah goes to their own gate. Which is a very beautiful idea in a lot of ways, because you could say this at so many different, you know, opportunities to give a Dvar Torah, something about each person has their own way. And it's a dangerous, you know, Dvar Torah also, because once you say that there's so much diversity, then you have to decide which point is already beyond the pale of what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate. But it's from the Chachma of the Arizal. I want to share with you a very fascinating question on this perspective. If it's true that there are indeed 12 different nuschos, each Shevet has their own nusach. Let me ask you a question. Right now, what do we have left? We have Sfarad and we have Ashkenazim. Those are the primary nusachs that we have. Then little variances. Again, Arizal is a little bit, you know, a little mix of this. And there's Temani, which is sort of a little more, you know, extreme than regular nusach Sfarad. But primarily, we have two nuschos. What am I? What Shevet am I from? I don't know. Whichever you're from? You know. The rest of us don't know. You know. But we should imagine that if Rachel knows that she's from Shevet Levi, she knows that she's from Shevet Levi. That means your family has a tradition going back mouth to mouth to mouth, father to father, father, all the way back to Aaron HaKohen, that you're from that same family. That tradition you maintained. Well, according to the Arizal, shouldn't you also have a separate Nusach of Tefillah? Are you aware that you and your cousins have a separate nusach different than mine and the lady on your left and the lady on your right? If the Arizal was right, shouldn't it be that if there are 12 nuschos, shouldn't Shevet Levi also have, if they kept their lineage for knowing that they're Levium, you don't think they would have kept their, there shouldn't be this like special Kohen and Levi nusach? How come there isn't? That's just a fascinating historical question on the Arizal's suggestion. That's the end of different nuschos. Any questions about different nuschos? Okay. So let's start going through Shemona Esrei, little by little. and we're not going to do it all today. We'll hopefully, we have two shiurim to do it today and next week. I hope we'll finish. I don't know if we will. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam she'hakol nehiyeh b'dvaro. Okay, so we start with, in my mind, the most difficult bracha. That's the bracha of Ava. So firstly, a word of halacha. We all try to daven with kavana. At least we try to daven with kavana. We want to daven with kavana. And the kavana is, of course, elusive from even the greatest of tzaddikim. I think the Rambam writes somewhere in a letter that he spent like the first, I don't know, like 70 years of his life trying to concentrate for an entire Shemana Esrei. Again, I'm making up the number, but there's some letter that indicates how, you know, how elusive it is even for somebody like the Rambam. Well, the most important place to have kavana is in the first bracha of Shemana Esrei, which carries its own challenge, in my mind, because it's the bracha that least relates to any specific need that I or even Klal Yisrael has. It doesn't talk about our needs in any which way. Nevertheless, it is halachically the most important bracha to have kavana. In fact, there's a Rashba, thank God we don't paskin like this, but just to share you an extreme opinion, the Rashba writes that a person is not allowed to have, imagine this, how could we describe this? It's not just that you have to concentrate on the words, it's that you can't even have a fleeting thought of anything else come into your mind during that first bracha. Now, if there's anyone here who has any challenges with OCD, this is a great place to really let loose, because this is incredibly difficult. We do not paskin like this Rashba. I repeat, we do not paskin like this Rashba. I assure you that practically every tefillah that I've ever davened, I've had many, 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 many other thoughts fleeting through my mind that had nothing to do with Avos. I'm not proud of it. That is what it is. We don't paskin like that. We do paskin, however, that you're only Yotze Shemona Esrei if you had Kavana during the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. That itself is all, it's not as scary as the Rashba, but it's still plenty scary. Why is it scary? Because there's so many Shemona Esreis that I've davened that I didn't have kavana at all during the first bracha. And I'm sure we could all share that sentiment. So what do we do? So it used to be, nowadays it's not the case, Mishnah Berurah points out, it used to be that if you didn't have kavana for the first bracha, you had to repeat Shemona Esrei. You go back to the beginning. Why don't we do that nowadays? Says in Mishnah Berurah, because we're scared you're just going to do it again without kavana. So we live in a generation where kavana is so difficult for us. So things are made a little bit lighter. What you do and can and ought take from this is that if you're going to work on kavana during davening, let the first bracha of Shemona Esrei be the primary place to work on, because that's the place where it really counts more than any place else. Yeah.
My understanding is there is many definitions of kavana. So which?
Thank you very much. Excellent question. Yes, there are. Let's start with two primary levels of kavana. There might be more after that, but two primary levels of kavana is an excellent question. Very important to point out. There is kavana that you know what the words are saying. Baruch atah, blessed are you, Hashem, God, Elkeinu, our God, Velkeinu, the saying of the God of Avraham, and the God of Yitzchak, and the God of Yaakov. That's one kind of kavana. There's a separate, independent kavana where I don't know what the words mean at all. I don't understand Hebrew. I read the words, maybe I read the transliteration, but I know that I'm standing in front of Hashem. That's a very different kind of kavana. For example, if you have a child or somebody who's new to Judaism or new to learning Hebrew, so maybe they could read the words, but they are not necessarily able to translate the words, but they know they're standing before Hashem. So that's also a kavana, but a different kavana. So the answer to your question is a little bit complicated. I think for the first bracha, we aim to have not only that I realize that I'm standing before Hashem, but to aim to also understand the words. For the rest of Shemona Esrei, I think it's sufficient as long as we realize that we're standing before Hashem. That's a thank you for pointing that out. So if our goal is to have kavanah at least for the first bracha, let's talk about what we're saying in the bracha of Avos. Why don't we talk about the Avos when we start Shemona Esrei? What do you say? Ophira, what do you say? Why is that a good place to start? Meaning Hashem should answer my tefillos, even if I don't necessarily deserve it, but because of the greatness of my Avos, so that's sort of like Hashem listened to my tefillos because of them.
And also, I think that being that this is really
we want to stand on their shoulders and sort of adopt whatever clothes they got, and we'll sort of take that and go where we go on their shoulders. Yeah? Okay. Why else might we start with Avos? What do you say, Ayana? Zuchas Avos? Meaning, a lot of things could run out, but that's one thing that we know is like the, what is it, the ever-ready rabbit? What rabbit is it? The Energizer rabbit, thank you. You still have the Energizer rabbit still.
So you have something to say, like if anything, just like people.
Okay, it's a very important point, and we're actually going to see at the end of this bracha that that is not a correct point. But nevertheless, it's very important because we're going to go somewhere with that idea with a little twist, and you'll see where that's going to be very important. Any other ideas? Why we start with Abbas? Yeah. So as I'm about to start my Shmoneh Esrei, I want to see myself in a bigger picture, the picture, the historical picture of the Jewish people.
And also thinking of all the kinds of Hashem's stuff for us as well as Israel.
Us, the bigger us.
To give you the right perspective on your history.
Okay, that's fabulous. Those are all, what?
It takes us back to our roots.
Takes us back to our roots. Okay, those are all, I think, very correct. They're all important ideas. There's one other aspect I'd like to add, and that's going to explain a very important idea that we haven't mentioned yet in Tefillah, even though it should be the most important thing to discuss about Tefillah. Why do we daven? Or why do we have our... I should not say that. We daven, maybe it's a mitzvah, at least the Rambam says it is. Why do we have three Tefillahs a day? What are the three Tefillahs a day parallel to? What? The Avos, and what's the other opinion? What? Yes, the karbanos, karban tamid in the morning, karban tamid of the afternoon for mincha, and at night, whatever extra karbanos they had. That's one opinion. The other opinion is that our tefillahs is parallel to the avos. What does that mean? It means that Avram established shachris, and Yitzchak established mincha, and Yaakov established marav, and if you look in the Gemara, you'll find the pasuk for each. Yeah. That's too deep for me. I don't understand. You're right. I just don't understand. But you're right. Yaakov, Yitzchak is Gevurah, Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevurah, and Yaakov is Tiferes. Right. I just have to figure out what Chesed and Gevurah and Tiferes are now. Then I'll be in good shape. But yes, you're right. Again, we did mention that it was written with by Nevi'im, and then obviously deep writing. But just, you know, just. Can I ask you a question? What would happen if you'd wake up one morning and you forgot your sitter somewhere? You're going on vacation. Summer is coming, and you and your friends planned a little trip somewhere. You drive a few hours away. The next morning you wake up, and lo and behold, did you bring a sitter? I thought you were bringing a sitter. There's no sitter. So you don't remember anything by heart. So you're going to daven shachris with your own words. Can I say now that Ya'el was metaken a new shachris? Is that going to be so incredible? I'm sure it would be. So what is it that Avraham was metaken shachris? And if Avraham wouldn't have been, then I would have. Yitzchak was metaken mincha. Okay, the sun is setting. I don't have a sitter with me. I'll write my own prayer. And do you think he actually davened mincha? You think he said the Shemoneh Esrei? We just said that he actually kind of said gedola. Wrote the text. So how could they do it 2,000 years before that? 1,500 years before that? I want to share with you a fabulous idea. What it means that the Avos were metaken tefillah. This is an idea I heard from the first Yeshiva of Keren B'Yavne, Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwich Zatzal, Rav Meir Goldwich from YU's uncle. He was a very tremendous tzaddik, Talmud Chacham. His shadchan was actually Rav Shach. Rav Shach was his shadchan. And I heard from him before he passed away the following idea. About 80 years ago, maybe, between 80 and 100 years ago, there was something called the transatlantic cable. You wanted to call Europe or send a telegram or telegraph to Europe. Well, before they had satellites to carry or optic ways to communicate, they had a wire that stretched from, I don't know if it was Boston or New York City, that went on the ground, on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean, all the way, very, very long wire, wire that was thousands and thousands of miles long, all the way, I think it made it to Ireland. I think that's the, is that correct? No? I think it was Ireland. And then from Ireland, it spread to wherever else in England, and the first communication in world history across the Atlantic was, I think, the President of America with the Queen of England, or something like that. That was the first communication in history across the Atlantic. And you had boats with long reels of wire traveling the Atlantic, sort of laying this wire down on the floor of the ocean bed. And there was one boat boats coming from one side of the Atlantic, other boats coming from the other side, and they sort of met in the middle. With that in mind, let me ask you a question. This is a question that we're not gonna, certainly not going to answer here. A question that basically deals with half of the Chachmas HaKabbalah. Half of the Chachmas HaKabbalah deals with this question. That's the question of, how could we connect to Hashem? One sentence, one question. How could man connect to Hashem? Hashem is infinite, we're finite. How could anything finite connect with the infinite? So what's the one-word answer to that? Who can give me the one-word answer to that? And yes, there is a one-word answer. How can humans, finite humans, connect with the infinite? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Borei Kol HaOlamos, Ribon HaOlamim. One-word answer. Yes, there's a one-word answer to that question. Not, I don't know, that's three words. What? I like it, but no. I'm all into Torah. It's a good thing. No? Any of you ever learned Kabbalah? Come on. A Hebrew word. Tzimtzum. Yes, that is the one word answer to the most fundamental question of Kabbalah. How could finite man connect with infinite Hashem? The answer is tzimtzum. Tzimtzum means somehow Hashem contracts himself and makes him, whatever. Again, these are words, I'm just saying words, I don't understand it, and allows himself to be interacted with by finity, without an I, without an I-N. By the physical world, somehow he allows it to happen. How? Okay, that's, again, that's not for me. Maybe when I turn 40, I'll be able to start learning about those things, but we're not there yet. Theoretically, we ought not be able to communicate with Hashem. There are many people who didn't believe, and still don't believe, that even if people believe in a God, they still don't necessarily think that God would ever communicate with man, or man would communicate with God, and that was a belief of a lot of people throughout history. How could we have a connection? The answer is that really we can't, and really we ought not be able to. Except that somehow, and I'm not answering the question by saying this, but somehow the Avos had such an incredible Mesiris Nefesh in every aspect of their lives, in their service of Hashem, they laid a groundwork through the incredible levels of Mesiris Nefesh that we can't even dream of connecting that distance between man and Hashem. Until the Avos, there was no person whose level of Mesiris Nefesh for Avodas Hashem was so great that there can be a connection between Hashem and man. However, once they did that, once they had that level of Mesiris Nefesh and created this connection to Hashem, Avraham, through his incredible Mesiris Nefesh, created a certain mode of connection to Hashem. Yitzchak created a different mode of connection to Hashem. Yaakov created a different mode to Hashem. You know what they did, the three of them? They laid the transatlantic cable that was connecting our world with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kivyachol. Once that transatlantic cable's there, what's the easiest thing in the world? Send your telegraph. It's there already. It's there already. That connection between us and Hashem was established, was created, was founded by that the Avos. Otherwise, we wouldn't have that. We're not big enough and strong enough and Moser Nefesh enough to create a connection to Hashem. They made that connection for us. So now what are we doing? We're more than just climbing on their shoulders. We're using the transatlantic cables that they set down connecting us with Shamayim. And now that the cable's there, I could just utter my tefillah and just flies along that cable that they set down. Obviously, it's a gross way, a gross visual image, but that's the idea of what Avos, tefillah Avos Tiknam. Each of the Avos had their own midos, their own personalities, their own unique way of creating to Hashem, their own, like you mentioned, each one had their own way of connecting. Once they set that connection down, so our tefillahs have the ease of just going from one place to another without much energy. And we know how little energy it takes to daven. And nevertheless, it still gets where it has to go, apparently. That is the concept of tefillah avos tiknam. Now, if I had to ask you, what's the most important thing to start tefillah with? Well, you could sort of hear that our whole right, our whole heter, the whole permission, I mean, we theoretically ought not be able to daven to Hashem. It just should be meaningless for us to connect to something so beyond. It's only through the avos and because of the avos that we're able to. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense that the thing that we start with is that sort of, the thing that gives us the heter to daven, the thing that sort of establishes for us the ability. We sort of mentioned that there was a man named Alexander Graham Bell, and he laid a transatlantic cable. Now I could call my aunt in Ireland once I realized that first step. Or, call it a different way, you know, I paid my quarter, which itself is realizing that first step. And then you could do whatever you have to do. So you have to sort of realize where it happened and how it happened. And then, of course, you could use what they set down for you. And this, of course, will answer, if you could open up your Sidurim, if you don't mind paying this. So the very beginning, Shimon Esrei, there's a question that the Mefarshei HaTfila ask. I want you to be our neighborhood editor. Jessie Wolf is not here tonight. She's in Denver for a simcha. But she's an editor at Scholastic, what is it called? Press, books, you know what it is. So we don't have her expertise here, but I think you could all do a good job editing this. Let's look at the first line of Shimon Esrei. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Elokeinu Velokei Avoseinu. Okay, Avraham, okay, Sakal, hey, Kayakov. Could you please do me a favor and cross out about two or three words and still convey the same exact point without losing one iota? One iota. What word would you cross out? Right. Okay, Avraham, okay, Sakal, Kayakov. Just say, okay, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. So first, Shatzfil explained that the reason why each of the avos gets their own Elokei, because each of them related to Hashem. That's what you were saying earlier, that's what you said, Rachel, with in terms of their midos, that's what you mentioned, Ophir, in terms of their standing on their shoulders. Each one had their own unique connection to Hashem, a different connection. Well, Avram had a connection through Chesed, whatever that means. Yitzhak had a connection through Gvura, Yaakov had a connection through Tiferes, through Torah, whatever. Again, what those connections were, I don't know. The point is that they each had a unique way of interacting, interrelating, kivyachal, with Hashem, and therefore we're relating to Hashem ourselves through each of those different modes of connecting to Hashem that each of the avos had in a different way. And it's not that each one just parroted their father's way of serving Hashem. It's not even that each of them just sort of riding on their father's discovery of Hashem. Each of those avos had their own discovery of Hashem on their own right. Of course, there was a Masorah that Avram gave to Yitzchak, Yitzchak gave to Yaakov, but they had their own unique discovery of Hashem, and hopefully that's the goal that we should have, not just seeing Hashem as our Elokei Avoseinu, but also seeing Hashem as Elokeinu, that we have to have our own unique discovery of Hashem, of course, that has within it a certain danger. But nevertheless, that is imperative to have that that personal connection, that personal connection to Hashem, not just based on what I've been taught and the connection that I have to Klal Yisrael, but also my own self-discovery of Hashem. That's why there are three Elokeinus. A few more words that we'll focus on before we get to the next bracha. Gomel chasadim tovim. Did anyone ever do you a chesed that wasn't tov? They did me good favors. Well, if you're doing a favor, that's probably a good favor. I would say, how do you do a guy a favor, a girl a favor, and it's not good? They cooked me a cake, but it was burnt. They helped me cross the street and walked me in front of a 12-ton truck. That's a favor, that's not good. What's chesedim tovim? So here, it's important to realize that inasmuch as that we're talking to Hashem, we're realizing what Hashem does, Hashem is the only one who could give a chesed that's tov. Because whenever I do a chesed to you, or you do a chesed to me, we never know what the outcome of that chesed will be. We never know what the end results will be. You'll try to do me a favor and you'll get me this job. Meanwhile, on that job, I'm gonna fall and break my leg, God forbid, or I'll have lost that other job that I might have gotten that would have paid me twice as much. I just didn't realize I was looking for a job. You helped me. So we don't know when the human does a chesed to another human. We don't know if it's a chesed that is or is not the best. Here we say, Hashem, you're the only one that could give us a chesedim tovim with no ta'arovis, no mixture of any ra in it. And here I just want to finish off this bracha, basically, with something that I don't remember who, was it Ariana mentioned? You said that Zuchus Avos never ends? Okay, so unfortunately Zuchus Avos does end. Does that mean that we're in trouble? Almost, but no. Let's look at the last few words of this first paragraph. Zocher chasdei Avos, Hashem, you remember all the chesed, all the stuff that the Avos did, that's what we talked about earlier. The Avos had an incredible level of mysterious nefesh that allowed us to connect to Hashem. Umevi goel, and therefore you're going to bring the Redeemer, the Fnei Vnei, to their grandchildren, that's you and I. So because of their greatness, you're going to give us the Geula. What is that called? That's called Zochus Avos, right? That's what you're talking about. So what are the next three words? You're going to bring the Geula. If not for our own, hopefully for our own merit. If we don't merit, then at least because of our avos. Let's stop there. What's lema'an shmo ba'ahava? The answer is that zuchus avos does not go forever. Zuchus avos does at some point run out. And then we're in trouble. Because if I don't deserve it, and my avos says zuchus doesn't deserve it, so we are in a very serious bind for a very long time. But you know what? There's still something that's left. There's Shem Hashem. For Hashem's sake, Hashem promised that He would redeem us, and even if I don't deserve it, and the Zuchus Avos is no longer there, L'ma'an Shemo, for Hashem's own sake, there will be the Geula. That's the end of the Bracha on Avos. And I just want to end with this Bracha with I can't say it's a story, but it's an anecdote. It's an anecdote that's cited in the Gemara Bracha, Staf Lamed Gimel, Amud Beis, 33b. I don't know if it ever bothered you, if it ever intrigued you, if it ever piqued your interest. In the third line, it's the end of the second line. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibar, Vahanara, Kel Elyon, Gomach Hazadim Tavim, Kanei Hakol, etc. So we have a few descriptions of Hashem. Not so many, not so few, not so many. Well, there was one guy who came in front of Rabbi Chanina. And when he davened for the Amud, you should have heard his Shemona Esrei. Listen to how his Shemona Esrei went. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor v'Hanora, Ha'adir, V'Ha'azuz, the mighty, V'Ha'yirui, the feared, Hechazak, the strong one, V'Ha'amit, the strong one, Havade, the certain one, Hanechba, the revered one. Now that's a Shemona Esrei, right? So, I don't know if that was the end of the list, or Rabbi Chanina waited till he finished it, till he finished his, you know, rendition of his all the praises. And when the poor chazan finished, Rabbi Chanina turns to him and said, "Oh, you finished all the praise of, you finished God's praise? That's all. It stops there." Then Rabbi Chanina says, "Obviously not. So why did you add it in the first place? The only reason why we say Kel Gadol Gibor Vanara is because there's a pasuk somewhere in Chumash." There where Moshe Rabbeinu describes Hashem as Hakel Gadol Gibor, and therefore Anshe Knesset HaGadolah had the right to to take that phraseology and install it into how we praise Hashem. That's the only right. We have no right to praise Hashem. And the Gemara gives an example. If there's a Melech Basar Vadam, there's a king, a human king, king of flesh and blood, who has 1,000, that's a million if you do your math, 1,000,000 gold coins. And we talk about how wealthy this king is. And we said, "Oh my gosh, he's so rich. He has 1,000,000 silver coins." Is that a praise for him? No, just the opposite. That's a degradation of the king. So here, if you get up and start praising Hashem and he has so much more than that, that's not a praise, just the opposite. That's a degradation, God forbid, of Hashem. And therefore, it's important to realize that when Chazal picked the words for these Shemana Esrei, they weren't arbitrary words, they weren't words because they rhyme nicely, they were picked for whatever specific reasons based on, and again, I'm not going to be doing this because it's going to be too tedious and boring, but if you want to see where every single word of Shemona Esrei comes from, in Tanakh, which it does, open up the Sefer Avudraham, I always thought it was Avudraham, somebody today called it the Avudarham, when I was talking to him, and I looked on the cover of my copy, or the Beis Medrash's copy of the Avudarham, and that's how it... That's how the Nekudas are, Avudarham, but I always thought everyone calls it Avudraham. Get your Avudraham or Avudarham, whatever you want to call him. He was a Rishon, lived about 900 years ago, and he has a Perush on Tefillah, and he goes through every single word in Shmona Esrei, showing exactly where in Tanakh that word is from. There is nothing here that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola put in because they thought it sounded nice, it sounds good, it flows well, it gets across the idea, everything is based on Tanakh. Of course, they themselves were Nevi'im, and they are putting the entire Tanakh, which is Nevuah, when we say the words of Shemona Esrei, we are borrowing words of Nevuah, of Tanakh, as we speak to Hashem, and that's why it's so important to realize that those communities that made adjustments in the Shemona Esrei, certainly in the Chasimos, as we saw earlier, but even in the other parts of Shemona Esrei, how that might not be the most intelligent thing to do, given that when those modern communities for the past 100 to 200 years made those adjustments, they were not necessarily made based on psukim, certainly not made with nevuah. It's just something to be wary of. Okay, that's the end of the first brach. Let's go to the next brach. The next brach is tricky. Atagi bar, because here, when I guess for the first 30 years of my life or so, I like this brach a lot, because here you sort of ask for everything in one fell swoop. That's a little easier to concentrate for one line. I can ask for everything I need. Hashem, please give me, okay, Tchias HaMeisim, sure, somebody help me, help those who have fallen, and, you know, heal the people who are sick, and get all those people out of jail, and, again, the people who are sleeping in the dust, raise them up, give Tchias HaMeisim. So it's like one line, and you have like five quick, choot, 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 quick bakashos. So this is already easier to concentrate. There's one problem. This bracha doesn't have any requests. These are not requests, these are praises. And therefore, when you have kavano during this bracha, you should not be saying, Hashem, please do refuah shleimah when I say Rofi Chalam. Hashem, please take that person out of jail when you say Matir Asturim. That's the wrong kavana. That's not what this bracha is saying. This bracha, I think I saw in Yisod V'Shorash HaVod or maybe elsewhere, this bracha is just a bracha that you recite with absolute simcha. Hashem, I'm so happy, I'm talking to you, the one who is Rofi Cholim Matir Asurim Mokayim Emunas Shefar. You're the greatest, I'm so happy to talk to you, you're the best, you do this, this, and this, and this, and this. I didn't ask you for any of those yet. That's just an important thing to keep in mind. One beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thought, if it was the end of the shiur, I'd end here just because of the beauty of the thought, but we still have a few minutes. So you could think of it at the end of the shiur, and then you could tell your friends what a wonderful shiur it was, because it could have ended here. Right before, the bottom of the page, Umatzmiach Yeshua, you make salvation sprout. The word sprout, Matzmiach, the word semach, a flower, is an interesting word. In English we use it, we say something such and such to sprout, but probably because we get it from the Judeo-Christian, way of speaking that we have in our country, probably gets it from, biblical sources. You might have read the book, A Tzaddik in Our Time, or in Hebrew, Ish Tzaddik Hayah, by Rabbi Aryeh Levin, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, with whom my father was fortunate to meet. My father went to Israel after he graduated YU in 1955. He went to Eretz Yisrael, and he met Rabbi Aryeh Levin, in Rabbi Aryeh Levin's elder years. And Rabbi Aryeh Levin offered the following pshat in these two words. Picture a seed. You're eating a grapefruit, and there's a seed. You take out the seed, and you want to grow yourself a grapefruit tree, because we don't have any grapefruit trees in Washington Heights. So you take your grapefruit seed, and you put it in soil. And you water it, and you let it stay in the sunlight in your kitchen, on the windowsill, and you wait about 4 or 5 days. And then you're too eager to let it wait the time, requisite time to actually let anything grow or sprout. And you look at that seed, and you stick your fingers into the dirt, and what do you see there? You see a seed that is decayed, that is deteriorated, that is mush, that is gook, and it's certainly not a flower. That, said Rabbi Levin, is exactly the point of Matzmiach Yeshua. In order for Yeshua to come, it works in the same way of a tzemach, in the same way that something grows. That the sprouting itself comes from a status of deterioration, a status of darkness, a status of everything being broken and breaking apart. And from that very status of being broken and being all gooky and mushy and deteriorated and degenerated, that's where the Yeshua can come from. If you would take that slice of history, that little slice in time, and look at it, it looks like it's mush. But it's from that mush, from that deterioration, sprouts the Yeshua. If you have that kavana in Matzmiach Yeshua, I think A, you will appreciate davening Shemoneh Esrei, because it has so much impact in our own lives in terms of hard times that we might go through, realizing that sometimes Yeshuas come from being in times of deterioration and things are not always easy, and from that specifically comes the Yeshua. And I think it will also just make you realize that when you look at Klal Yisrael, here specifically we're talking about Tchias HaMeisim, that because things could look terrible and dismal, that's just looking at it as one slice of time without seeing the whole picture of the flower. Just you have to realize that that's how flowers sprout. Okay, that's Atah Gibor. Let's go to the next bracha, Atah Kadosh. Now Atah Kadosh is at a pivotal point in Shemoneh Esrei, because the first brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, as we mentioned, are not requests. In fact, you're not permitted to submit a request in the first few brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, nor in the last few. You have to leave the request for the middle. The first and last are, the first are, of course, Shevach. The last few are, of course, Hodah, appreciation, thanks. So Atah Kadosh is at a pivotal point because it's sort of the switching point between praising Hashem and asking Hashem for all of our needs. And that's why this bracha is here. Because what's going to happen if I am about to switch modes and realize that the Hashem I'm about to speak to is the one who is going to be the one who is going to forgive me and make me get a 99 on my final, and he's going to save me from all my problems, and he's going to heal, take away my headache, and he's going to give me a really great job offer next week, and he's the one who's going to, you know, be Makabetz or the Golios, hopefully, you know, very soon, and he's going to rebuild Yerushalayim, and he's going to put David HaMelech back. So if I'm about to start going that direction, I might sort of have a certain perception of Hashem as this, like, superhero guy with a, you know, king on, like, a really beautiful white stallion, superhero powers, and he sort of runs over here, and he does, takes care of that, runs over there, and whoosh, does that, and he sprinkles a little bit of refuah here, and a little parnassus sprinkles there, and we might sort of ruin our perspective of what Hashem is. He's a guy that takes care of all the stuff for us, right? So that's why specifically at this point we have to realize, right before we're about to actually go and realize how Hashem is involved in everything that happens in our own active physical lives, and the physical universe in which we live, and the physical universe that we need His help in, we remind ourselves, even though I'm about to ask Him for all those things, I still have to realize Atah Kadosh. Hashem Kadosh just means beyond our understanding. Hashem is beyond physicality, beyond the parameters of time, space, and everything else. Hashem is beyond. And that's why here is the time to realize that. And once I realize that Hashem is well beyond that, somehow, as we explained earlier through Tzimtzum, which is not for us, we don't have to think about Tzimtzum so much, it's not going to get us anywhere. Nevertheless, I ask Hashem for all the things I'm about, for the laundry list that I'm about to present to Him. So let's begin the laundry list. We ask Hashem to help us do well on our finals. Atachonin l'adam das, umlamed l'enosh bina. Why do we start off all of our bakashos asking for das? What do you say? Why is this the first thing to ask for wisdom, for intelligence? I would say Jelly Bellies would be a good place to go. Or those who know me, Twizzlers. Why das? Chachma. What do you say? Not to put you on the spot or anything. Just you haven't been here in 2 months, so. Why is Da'as the place to, the thing to ask first? I'm assuming if a Chazal put it there first, it probably means either called the most significant or maybe not the most significant, but there's some, definitely an order to this. Okay, so I can't hear two things. A, in order for you to ask, you have to be aware of what is happening in the world and yourself so that you could ask for it. That's A. And was that B? Okay, so you're asking, you have to be aware of yourself and the world to be able to ask. Okay. Ophir, was your hand up? Okay, that's taking this with a twist. You want to ask for the right things. The only problem is, like, Chazal sort of set down for us what we should ask for. So it's sort of, you have the script in front of you. Of course, in Shema Kaleni, you're going to add your own things, but we have the script. What else? Yeah? Interesting. That's the one area where you might say, oh, this is really mine. Like, if I'm strong, that's because God made me strong. If I'm whatever, it's because God made me whatever. But if I'm intelligent, that's because I worked hard, I studied, I learned, so therefore... That's interesting. There's a pasuk against you, though. Al Yishalel Chacham B'Chachmaso, which says that a Chacham might become haughty because of his wisdom. Which is the opposite of what you're saying, because you're saying this is the one place where you wouldn't become haughty. Right? I hear you saying that. Any other ideas? Why do we start with Chachma? Rina, what do you say? Okay, that's interesting. I wasn't going to say this now, but I'll say why it is. From a philosophical perspective, from the history of philosophy perspective, it is very important that we, in general, ask for wisdom. Because there were different ideas throughout history of what wisdom really is. There was a certain time in history where they thought that wisdom was all within man. You sort of just had to uncover it. That's actually a progressive mode of education now. Some of you are taking graduate school courses in education. That is the progressive mode, that the student is a student. You just have to sort of facilitate whatever things they have within them and sort of bring them out. And this bracha says, no, that's not what we believe. There's something called chachma. There's something called wisdom. And you know where it is? It's not in me. It's not just a matter of bringing out what is inside of me in those. Of course, we have talents. We should have teachers who facilitate bringing out our talents. But wisdom, chachma, don't think it's all within yourself, as many philosophers throughout history might have thought. No, there's chachma that's somewhere in the world, whatever, there's chachma to learn, and now I have to learn it. So I have to ask, when do I ask for something? When it's outside of me, I have to ask to get it. Okay. I think all the ideas that you said about why chachma is important, is why chonin hadas is important. One idea that I saw that really struck me is because we're starting with chachma because that's the area where we are different from animals. We're different from animals in one area, not because we eat, not because we need health, not because we need salvation in a certain sense, maybe, maybe not, but we have wisdom. So we're sort of starting off our tfilos in that very point where we are human, in that very point that makes us human, and that's in the area of wisdom, that's what makes us unique. I'll offer you a very cute idea. I don't think this is a simple explanation, but it's a cute idea to think about. This is the idea that the Chida writes based on a Gemara. The Gemara says, Asur lirachem al mi she'en lo da'as. Somebody who's foolish, you have no right to pity them. If you see a guy who, or a girl who just does foolish things, doesn't think about things, acts foolishly, don't pity them. Don't pity them. It's their own foolishness. They want to dig their own grave, let them dig their own grave. Don't pity those who are foolish. Someone who doesn't have das. So based on that, the Chida says, oh, so when do you get pity? When does somebody deserve to be pitied? Don't pity the person who lacks das. So who should you pity? People who have das. So what do we want? If we want to get Hashem's pity, even the rest of Shemoneh Esrei, what's the first thing I should ask for? Das. Oh, I'm somebody that has das. So Hashem, please, now that I'm somebody that has das, I'm somebody that's intelligent, that's making intelligent decisions, I'm the kind of guy who you should be merachem. And therefore, we could go with our laundry list and ask for rachman in all those areas because I am somebody who has das. Okay, that's just a cute thought. I want to finish this bracha with a very important gemara. You may have heard it, and even if you have, it's worth repeating. If you haven't heard it, then it's worth hearing. The gemara has a list of a number of things. We'll start with this one. The gemara asks, what should a person do to become a chacham? The Gemara answers, well, the obvious. Yarbe b'yeshiva, do a lot of sitting, meaning study a lot, v'yama'it b'schara, and do less working. You work less and you study more, there's a greater chance you'll know something. You'll become a chacham. The Gemara says, yeah, sounds great, sounds like a good model. However, harbe asu v'lo alsa b'yadam. There are a lot of people who tried it, and the model didn't work. People studied a lot and didn't work as much, and they studied and studied and studied. They dedicated their time to study, and they didn't necessarily become a chacham. Answers the Gemara: Ella yevakesh chachma mi shehachachma shelo. You have to ask for chachma from he whom gives chachma, from he whom chachma is his. Meaning, it's not enough to study; you have to ask from it. Who is the Baal HaChachma. And therefore, I'm not saying we open up with Chachma, but that's just an important idea. The fact that we ask for Chachma, you could do all the Hishtadlis you want, you could study for the test, you could take every Kaplan's and exam crackers and Princeton Review and whatever other LSAT and GMAT and DAT and SAT and MCAT preparation tests that you want, but ultimately, we have to daven for the Siyata Deshmaya to be able to get the Chachma that we want. Let's finish off with one more bracha. I think we might have time for the bracha of Hashivenu. I've asked you to do tshuva. Basically, the bracha of tshuva is asking Hashem to help us do tshuva, which we're asking Hashem to hopefully peel off that elephant skin that covers our hearts. Take a really heavy duty peeler and take off that elephant skin so we can have that humility to do tshuva. And I saw pointed out that it has to come right on the heels of chachma. Because when can a person come to do tshuva? Only after a moment of contemplation. Only when you think. When you think for a moment, all of a sudden you start realizing, oh wow, maybe I... In the flow of life, we never just come to do tshuva. Or very rarely. Tshuva comes to people who think. If you take a moment to contemplate, you take a moment to sort of evaluate, to think where you are, what should I be doing, how should I be doing it, that's where tshuva can happen. Right after Chon Hadas, then it's possible to have tshuva. And just to finish off, in the entire Shemoneh Esrei, there are only two brachas that says the word Avinu, where we address Hashem as Avinu. This bracha, Hashivenu Avinu, and the next bracha, Slach Lanu Avinu. Because in both of these brachos, we have to realize that as far as we might have distanced ourselves from Hashem, Hashem is not just the Melech to us. We have the word Melech in other places. Melech, Rofei. Melech elsewhere. But in these two brachas, when we think of ourselves as, oh my gosh, I'm beyond gone, I'm too far away. No, Avinu, I could do tshuva. Avinu, Hashem could still offer me the slicha that I need because a father never gives up. And finally, we'll conclude with this. We ask Hashem for tshuva shlema. Hopefully in the weeks before Rosh Hashanah, we'll have a series on tshuva. But there are different levels of tshuva. There are infinite levels of tshuva. We ask Hashem to do tshuva shlema. And tshuva shlema means, even though, what am I asking for? Whatever tshuva I do, I do. Whatever tshuva I don't do, I didn't do. No, because I can ask Hashem, I'm going to do my little bit. My little bit that I could do, I'm going to try to do. And after that, Hashem, I want you to help me do, or at least achieve, all the rest of tshuva that I would like. Pischuli pesa kipischo shel machad, open up for me. The Gemara says, a tiny little hole, the eye of a needle, of tshuva, and I'll open it up for you. I'll open up your hearts like the hole, like a great hall, like a great wedding hall. And of course, as B'derech Shadam Holech B'malichna, so the way that a person wants to go, that's how Hashem guides him. So we ask Hashem, tshuva shlema, I'm going to do my little bit, please Hashem, help me go the rest of the way. So hopefully Hashem should help us do tshuva, Hashem should help us have kavana, and we should have a wonderful week.